On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
Let's talk about the situation as it pertains to the coronavirus itself, particularly the Indian variant. Anyone who was watching Boris Johnson giving his weekly press conference on Friday evening will be aware that now the UK is perhaps humming and hawing a little bit about whether to proceed with the reopening of society in line with the exact schedule that's been laid out because of the threats of the Indian variant. So to discuss that and more, I'm joined on the line by Professor of Microbial Disease at UCD and ID Physician at St Vincent's, Paddy Mallon. Paddy, thank you for taking our call this lunchtime. We might start off by just assessing what you believe the threat of the Indian variant to be and how prevalent it is in Ireland right now.
So I think that we stand in it. The first thing I'd like to say about where we stand is that we have a very good system developed in place since January that actually gives us sight in terms of this P6172, or what people are referring to as the Indian variant, and where it is in Ireland. And that's an important thing, because we're not going to be caught off guard with this. What we've seen just in the weekly reports that are coming from the Health Protection Surveillance Centre, who set up a surveillance system for this, is that there have been 34 cases of the P6172 variant that have been reported in Ireland. Now, that represents overall less than 1% of the total cases that we've sequenced, so it's very low. Having said that, when you look at the week-on-week data, this variant has really only appeared in the last, say, 3 to 4 weeks. Mm. And we are seeing the proportion of variants of concern that comprise this 6172 variant, they're increasing. So it's present and it is increasing. So it's something that we've just got to watch for. But at the moment, the overall levels of it in the country are low. Mm. The second thing I'd say is that these surveillance systems, coupled with really good public health intervention where they find them, together with the border biosecurity that we've set up, you know, we have been able to control other variants in the country. So if you look, for example, at the P1 variant, the South American variant, and the the B351 variant from South Africa, when we looked 4 or 5 weeks ago, they were present and we were picking cases up. They've largely fallen away. So, you know, there is the potential for us to control it, but we just need to be vigilant and we need to keep up the controls that we have, especially on border banks.
I was going to say, do you think on that front, the fact that they've fallen away, is that the fact that either hotel quarantine is isolating them, or even the fact that we have a hotel quarantine system is acting as a disincentive for anyone to travel who might be bringing the virus with them?
I think it's a combination of factors. Certainly having good border biosecurity and border surveillance is important, and that includes mandatory hotel quarantine where it's appropriate. But together with that, these surveillance systems are important, because these surveillance systems enable our local public health divisions and our local public health teams to go in and pay particular attention to any small outbreaks that involve these variants. So it's a combination of factors, but I think it's a nice demonstration that this combination of factors so far seems to be effective in terms of preventing these variants taking root. Whether that remains the same for the P617 variant, it remains to be seen. It's still very early days. The big difference with this variant is that it is causing a problem in the UK. It's worrying the UK authorities in terms of the number of cases that they're picking up, especially in regional clusters. Mm. And pretty much everything that we've done with this pandemic from the start has been very closely linked to what happens in the UK. So this is going to be a challenge for us in the weeks ahead.
Well, yeah, the concern would be that we would follow something of the UK lead, because they're now reporting hundreds and hundreds of these cases. And obviously we are trying to pursue certain border biosecurity measures, as you've mentioned, but there would be a concern about how much faster this could take root. Do we know how much quicker that this Indian variant spreads relative to the B117, which has now been dominant in Ireland?
The early data is suggesting that it has a greater ability to spread, and that's really what's worrying the UK authorities, and the fact that this could cause a surge. And they're already concerned that in some local outbreaks within the UK that they're seeing these sort of surge characteristics, and they are seeing people getting sick with this variant. The good news, however, is that this variant does not seem to be less amenable to vaccination, to the protection from vaccination. So it doesn't seem to be a vaccine escape variant.
It's not vaccine proof, so to speak.
Yeah, so the vaccinations, the data that we have so far suggests that the vaccinations work. And the UK authorities are actually now starting to use vaccination. It's a program called Surge Vaccination. So to actually go into areas where they're seeing a lot of this variant emerging and use mass testing techniques, but together use what's called surge vaccination techniques to try and vaccinate a lot of people very quickly. to see if they can control spread of the variant.
Okay, we will talk about the massive surge testing, because I know that's something that you have some opinions on, and we'll get back to that in just a second. But people may have been confused because they heard Boris Johnson on Friday evening when he was talking about the rising incidence of this Indian variant. He was suggesting that there might be something of a race against time, a vaccine versus variant. And if you're saying that this new variant doesn't seem to be immune or proofed from our vaccines, what is the difficulty there, or where is the race? Is it a concern that maybe the variant will get to somebody and infect them so that they are just too infectious to vaccinate at any given point in time?
So there's two issues here. There's three issues. If you have a more transmissible virus, like the P617, and you have a partially vaccinated population, so people that have had the first dose of a vaccine and haven't had the second dose of the vaccine, that creates a risky environment. Creates a risky environment that you may end up getting people that are picking up infection because they haven't got the adequate full immune response. And that's one of the reasons that they're really pushing the vaccination rates up.
So in other words, the 70-odd percent protection that you might get from one dose just wouldn't be enough to offer you a kind of a concrete assurance?
May not be enough. Now, okay. The second thing then about the ability of this virus to evade vaccine responses, the reassurance is coming from early data from lab studies. And early data from lab studies doesn't always transfer into full vaccination coverage within a population when you actually test this clinically. So there is a level of uncertainty. There's reassurance from the early lab data, but you're not really going to know for certain until you actually see this virus circulate within a population that's vaccinated to know if that's true. Then the third thing is, with any vaccination, you're going to have a huge variability in vaccine responses within a population. And we know that vaccines are really good. You know, when you compare them to vaccines for other diseases, they're really good, but they're never going to be 100% effective. So you will always have people that have been fully vaccinated that may still be vulnerable. The numbers would be small. But if you've got a more transmissible virus and it's circulating, then the chances of those individuals coming into contact with the virus increases, and you may start to see cases of people that are vaccinated coming in sick.
Okay.
So we're really hoping that that's not going to be the case, but that's one of the reasons why this is being treated with such urgency in the UK, and it's another reason that we need to continue to be very vigilant.
Okay. Just before we talk about your views on antigen testing, just on the first of the three points you mentioned there, the fact that if you've only had one of the two doses that you still might have a vulnerability, does that present something of a concern for Ireland? Because we know that the proportion of adults with the first dose is now creeping up towards 40%, but the proportion who have had two doses or who are fully vaccinated is still only around 500,000, and it could be a couple of weeks before they have full immunity. Does that mean that if the border security measures were to fall frail in some way, that we could be under threat from this?
So the big issue here is the release of restrictions, and this is it's a debate they're having in the UK, very similar to what we're having here. The UK are in the position now where they are trying to release restrictions. They're trying to get the country out of a lockdown scenario, trying to get people back to work. The issue with that is that you end up with more contacts, you end up with a greater ability for the virus to spread.
Okay.
And that really is, it's back to the basics, and it's going to be the same basics here. It's not so much about one key element, whether it's border biosecurity, it's not about one key element, whether it's vaccines, it's everything in the mix. The strategy where you use vaccination as your sole protection against the spread of the virus as you release restrictions is a risky strategy. And from that perspective, we just need to be very careful over the next few weeks as we continue to release restrictions and as people get back to some sort of normality in their lives, that we watch that we don't end up with this more transmissible virus and see another bounce back in cases. We don't want to take one step forward and two step backwards.
But there'll be so people listening to this lunchtime, Paddy, though, who'll think that we have no other option, that surely if vaccination is supposed to be the silver bullet, that we, of course, would have to start relaxing restrictions in some sense. So are you saying that given the presence of this, or given the risk that it might pose if we relax restrictions too early, that we should be waiting simply until more people have had their second dose?
It's not that we need, but the bottom line is we don't know. What I'm saying is there is still a level of uncertainty in terms of the approach, and no one knows for certain what is going to work. And I think the public probably understand that level of uncertainty. And it may be that as we see that we need to watch to see how this variant emerges. We need to watch to see how the daily case numbers change as people start having more interactions. And I think people just need to accept the fact that even though we're coming out of restrictions, that the basics are still important. The physical distancing, the hand washing, all of those basics are going to still remain important in the months to come. Even as we get maybe even up into 40, 50% fully vaccinated, because this is still going to be a threat. And it really is until we reach that herd immunity level, you know, where we're getting a high proportion of the population fully vaccinated. It's only really at that stage that I hope that we'd have adequate protection, that a lot of this, a lot of these issues around variants and the like really become less of an issue.
Okay. The other issue that we wanted to talk to you about today was the role of antigen testing, and it's reported in today's Sunday Independent and a few other newspapers highlighting the contention that there is between NPHET and government and even within some scientific figures. You tweeted on Friday, I think it was, you said, visiting relatives today, no symptoms, used an approved antigen test, correctly read after 15 minutes. I'm now at least 99.8% certain that I'm not infectious today. Now I'm happier going to visit, and that's what the science tells me. Simple. Now, that comment was put to the Chief Medical Officer, Tony Houlihan, by Paul Cullen of the Irish Times at the NPHET briefing on Friday afternoon. Here's a little bit of what the CMO had to say.
I haven't seen that tweet, and I'm not aware of it. Look,
but you know Paddy Mallon.
I do indeed. You know as well as I did there is a range of scientific opinion in relation to this matter. We're clear in the conclusions that we're drawing from this. We're clear in the advice that we're giving to people. We don't think that antigen testing should play a role in people who may have been vaccinated, for example. And we certainly don't think that antigen testing, as applied to individuals self-administered in uncontrolled circumstances, has a role to play. We are not saying in the same voice, as we've said on a number of occasions here this afternoon and previously, that we don't see a role for antigen testing. So it's not... it's not a view that antigen testing isn't, in certain circumstances where there's good scientific evidence and trial evidence to show its application, that it's something worth using and has a role to play in this disease. But our real concern is that an individual taking a test, and I think where a lot of the confusion leads people, not unreasonably, is to believe that if I take this test and it shows that I don't have the disease, maybe the thing I'm thinking of doing, meeting up in the park and having a few pints, might be safer than they're saying or whatever. That's exactly the kind of concern that we have. It will drive inappropriate public health behaviour with people who believe that they're protected when in fact they're not.
Now, I'm sure in your own instance, Paddy, the fact that you're a professor of microbial diseases and you're an infectious diseases physician means that you're probably competent enough about administering the test, and you're not going to have maybe some sort of sloppy administration the way that other lay people might. But what do you make of the principle of what Tony Houlihan said there, that effectively on an individual basis, he doesn't see there being a role for antigen testing?
So the first thing it said is that the reason that I sent that tweet is because I think that there's been a lot of confusing messages going out there over the last week. And I think that we're in a particularly difficult scenario in the country at the minute, in that we have EU approved tests that are being made available to the public. And we have these tests that have now been around since September. They are being used in a number of circumstances around the globe, and they're being used for a specific purpose. You see a good example of their use for a specific purpose yesterday at the FA Cup final, where you had a number of thousands of people coming up to support the football team, with the risk of transmission within that setting being reduced by everyone having to take a lateral flow antigen test prior to attending the football match. So within the scenario where you have these tests available, I think that there is an obligation to ensure, as the CMO said, that the clear message goes out there that these tests need to be taken and used appropriately. But these tests are not...
If you're administering them to 9,000 people at Wembley, these are going to be administered by professionals. It's not going to be people doing them DIY at home.
I didn't say they need to be administered by professionals, because these technically are not difficult tests to do. But having said that, where the tests start to fall down, one of the issues where the tests start to fall down is if they're not administered appropriately. If the swab isn't taken appropriately, if the test isn't done right, for example, if the test is read too late, you can end up with false positive results. And then, as the CMO has said very clearly, and I completely agree with 100%, it's the consequences of the test. Where these tests are best used is if someone is taking a decision to do something that they think may carry a risk, then it can be used as a risk reduction. These tests should not be used as a means of someone believing that they're not infectious and therefore they do not need to adhere to public health advice.
So it's not a passport for you to act whatever way you like or way in pre-virus ways.
And none of the reports that certainly I've been involved in that the government are now using, for example, the Ferguson report, none of these reports actually suggest that that's used for these. These tests are best designed as an additional risk reduction tool. And when you look at the science behind these tests and the published science behind these tests, where these tests perform best is to identify people that are potentially infectious. And when you use them in that context, I think that they're a very useful tool in the context of people, especially as we're coming out of restrictions, where people may be mixing more as a means to try and reduce further the risk of transmission. That's one of the reasons, for example, why Simon Harris's department are exploring test modalities within the university sector to see if they can be used to bring back teaching. Mm. It's another reason why, for example, Minister Varadkar also released similar guidance on Friday as well within the employment sector.
But there is some confusion around that, because I was at the press conference on Friday afternoon when Leo Varadkar published those new guidelines, and he again was sticking to the idea that antigen testing may only pick up half of the positive cases, so that there was, in his eyes, and I think this is the way that Tony Houlihan and others have explained it as well, that there might be a 1 in 2 chance that you could be infectious and a PCR and an antigen test rather might miss that. Now, you said in your tweet that you are at least 99.8% certain that you're not infectious. And people will wonder then, well, which is it? Is it one or the other, or can it be both?
So the 99.8% that I'm not infectious means that there is a 0.02% chance that I am infectious. If I'm unlucky enough to be one of those 0.02% of people, the antigen will pick up half of them. I haven't said that then, you've got two options. You can either have an option where you do no testing, in which case those 0.2% of people are infectious and continue on their way to infect other people. Or you can have a scenario where there is testing and 50% of those 0.2% of people are picked up, they identify themselves as infectious, and they're taken out of circulation.
But if you're saying that you are 99.8% certain that you're not infectious, at least the way in which the remarks of ministers are being understood would suggest that, in fact, you could only be 50% certain, because there's a 1 in 2 chance that you could be infectious and these tests wouldn't pick it up.
See, this is where the confusion picks. This is where the confusion or the mixed messages are picked up. The tests have a very good negative predictive value. And if you take a test to say, am I negative today? That is the value of the test. The key is that if there's a small risk that you could be positive, if you're one of the small proportion of people who is positive on that day and you take the test, 50% of the time you'll be picked up. Now, this is within an asymptomatic environment, because again, no one is suggesting that these tests should be used for people with symptoms. We have a very good PCR screening system in the country to pick up people that have symptoms, and people with symptoms should get a PCR test. The scenario that I'm talking about is asymptomatic people, where there's a background prevalence of the infection, because that's what drives waves. About 30% of people who have SARS-CoV-2 have no symptoms. And at the moment, there is no testing program, apart from isolated walk-in test programs. There's no testing program for people who are asymptomatic, who may be carrying SARS-CoV-2.
So if you are non-symptomatic,
in the setting where you have no testing, and you say, is this test better than no test? Well, this test will pick up 50% of those cases. No tests will pick up 0% of those cases.
Okay.
And that's the basis of it. And that's how it's being used internationally, on the basis of that premise. It's not that you're looking at mass screening, but you're looking at targeted screening, where people are partaking in approved activities, where there carries a risk, where that risk can be reduced by the introduction of appropriately administered and tested and approved antigen tests.
Okay. We will leave it there, Paddy. Thanks so much for your time this lunchtime. Paddy Mallon there, Professor of Microbial Diseases at UCD and also an Infectious Diseases Physician at St. Vincent's.